This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the NSPS Radio Hour for another episode today. We're glad you're with us. For some, a cold day, I guess. For others, maybe not so cold, but nonetheless, we appreciate you being with us today. We have a really interesting show today, and one that I think all of our listeners will be interested in because of the efforts we at NSPS have been making for years now, trying to deal with the issue of the actual location of rights-of-way for railroads and how those are determined and how they can get determined after abandonment occurs and tracks go away. As most of the listeners know, this is something we've had conversations with federal agencies and railroad companies for years and years. And recently, our friend Gary Thompson, who all of our listeners will know, a former NSPS president, currently treasurer of NCWS, had talked to me about a company, and I'm going to get a better explanation from this from our guest in a few moments, called the North Carolina Railroad Company, and a project that they were pursuing, which was really, really intriguing to me. So I decided to contact Kristen Forslund there, who is the GIS coordinator for the North Carolina Railroad, and talk with him about what they've been doing and have him share his story with us. And I'll let Christian speak for himself here in a couple of minutes. But one of the things that you'll be seeing sometime relatively soon, and I think it's in the next edition probably of the Professional Surveyor magazine, is an article that Christian has written on this particular topic. So with that, I'm going to introduce Christian Forslund and welcome you to the show, Christian. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. This is a real nice treat.
Yeah, we like to keep the show interesting, and I know our audience is interested in this topic. But as you and I have talked about before, you know, it's just a conversation, so we're pleased to have you with us. So maybe a good way to start is introduce yourself a little bit and then also tell our audience what the North Carolina Railroad Company is.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, GIS coordinator for North Carolina Railroad Company. I've been so for about 8 years. Before that, I did some time, as I like to call it, with various mapping firms, specializing in cadastral and photogrammetric mapping. So I've been in the geospatial industry for close to 20 years now, all told, and I've really enjoyed it. It's something that, you know, I never really thought I would do. Of course, you know, the technology was kind of coming into its own as I was coming out of college, so it just turned out to be a good fit. With the railroad here, I'm not a railroad guy. I'm a GIS guy who works for the railroad. And I've learned a lot in 8 years. Railroading is a very complex business, especially when you work for a unique organization like the North Carolina Railroad. It doesn't necessarily take on the same characteristics as other railroads. So it's very interesting. I don't know how much Gary had filled you in or not up to this point, but North Carolina Railroad is actually 165 years old today. We're going to be having a little birthday celebration later on in the afternoon. So in 1849, the state chartered this railroad for economic development purposes. North Carolina needed a way to get goods and people into the interior of the state. So the legislature passed a bill calling for the East to West Railroad in North Carolina. The North Carolina Railroad Company, or the NCRR for short, went from Charlotte to Goldsboro, North Carolina. There was also another railroad that we have since combined with, which was the Atlantic and North Carolina Road that went from Goldsboro to Morehead City at the coast. Those two were combined in 1989 to form what is now the North Carolina Railroad Company. It's a unique animal because it's a private company, but it's owned by the state of North Carolina. In 1998, I believe, the state of North Carolina bought out all private shareholders of the railroad. So that usually gives people some, it causes some confusion in day-to-day business with the North Carolina Railroad, in that we are a private company. I'm a railroad employee, but our company is owned by the state of North Carolina. And that's where the uniqueness begins, but it certainly doesn't end there. We are 317 miles long, predominantly 200 feet wide, and in 2001, the North Carolina Railroad Board of Directors implemented a corridor improvement management program, and shortly thereafter began to staff up in order to manage that railroad corridor improvement program. And that's where they brought in GIS as a very useful technology to help manage the land asset of the North Carolina Railroad Company.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear about some of your former activities in mapping firms with the photogrammetric side. And of course, you obviously are aware, as are our North Carolina listeners at least, that North Carolina, in its licensing law, similar to some other states, maybe a little bit different characteristics in the way they've done it, but have included mappers and mapping as part of the surveyor licensing structure. And I noticed in your information that you hold that distinction as well.
That's correct, yeah. And in December, you know, I qualified for my PLS under that provision. I'm proud to have it. Tomorrow night is actually the induction ceremony, so I'm going to be bringing my family, and we'll make it official.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah, not all of our states have adopted that philosophy yet in terms of recognizing the, for lack of a better term, the mappers, and not the, mm-hmm. the boundary surveyors necessarily, but the people who do mapping, still part of the overall profession and important to have within the licensing structure. In North Carolina's one of the states that has done that. So we're really, really pleased to do that. So the whole Charlotte to Goldsboro and then Goldsboro to Morehead City thing is kind of interesting. I don't know how much you and I talked about my background growing up, but I'm a borderline kid. I grew up 15 miles north of Mount Airy, North Carolina, across the Virginia border at the top of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually born in Mount Airy, but I have had a lot of connection with that part of North Carolina all my life. So when you talk about those locations, for me, that brings back a lot of memory to my connection to that part of the state.
Yeah, I could talk about the history, you know, for a long time. There's a very rich history, and we have an archives department here at the railroad as well. We're still, you know, we dig up stuff, you know, on a regular basis, artifacts and documents from, you know, 165 years is a lot of history, and railroads were a big part of economic development in the state and, for that matter, the country. So it's, I can go on and on about that sort of thing.
And I suppose, just as I'm thinking about that corridor that you're talking about and what's along that corridor, obviously the fact that the railroad was there was a big influence on how industry developed in the state, I'm sure.
That's correct. We've done some studies to determine how much of the state's economy our railroad touches, and I don't know the figures. I believe they're referenced on our website. But it is interesting, just from a geographic perspective, some of those municipalities were already in existence when the railroad came through. And in those instances, our corridor is not a uniform 200 feet. However, when you look at it geographically, you can see major highways, whether they're U.S. highways or interstate highways, seem to travel along that same route. U.S. 70, I-40, and I-85, all three of those kind of take on the same route. And some of our old maps even have some of the old wagon trails or horse paths, whatever you would like to call them, that still to this day, I mean, you can make a good case that the present-day road was that road that was on our maps 165 years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting the way that type of thing evolves. Mm-hmm. And North Carolina is probably similar to Virginia, or at least the northern part of Virginia, in that regard, where when I first moved to this part of the state, I hadn't really thought about it before, but all the roads run east-west, all the major highways.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was the producers in the western part of the state or the western part of the region had to get their goods to the coast or to the bay, So that's where all the roads went. And even now, here we are, hundreds of years later, and the road systems for future development are just now catching up with providing that access north-south at the same level as it's always been east-west. When you think back through history and how you know, what drives, whether they're railroads or cart paths or whatever the case may be, what drives them to be built the way they are, and usually it has something to do with commerce.
Yeah, there's not a town that we don't go through that doesn't have a railroad street or a railroad avenue, which is most often the road that was closest to the freight depot that people would use to get their goods off their carts onto the train.
Right. Yep. Well, that's quite a history for the railroad itself and how it began. And I know that as we go on in the show, we want to talk about the project that, in particular, that you have going. But I'm curious about where things are headed. You know, where you're, what's the goals for moving forward, and we can talk about those as we get further in the show. We've got about 3 minutes to break, so I don't know if it's a good time to start that or not. Maybe we can get in a little bit before we go to break.
Yeah, we've come a long way in 165 years, that's for sure, you know, technology and just the makeup of the railroad. You know, we had various operators, both Southern Railway and the Richmond and Danville Railroad, now Norfolk Southern, which is the successor to Southern Railway. And we don't. An important distinction to make right before the break would be that we don't operate trains. We manage the corridor. We lease the operations to Norfolk Southern, and that would be an important distinction when we start to talk about the monumentation project.
Well, that is a good distinction, and I don't know that you and I had actually talked about that, but that does put a little different spin, I guess, on your goals and your management of the property, so to speak, versus your primary objective being running goods up and down the line. And so that does give you a different perspective on the topic we're going to talk about than a typical railroad company might have. I can understand how that would be the case.
That's right. Yeah, we're more focused on managing the land than we are running the trains. You know, Norfolk Southern is responsible for, you know, making money and hauling goods, and we are our charge is to protect the asset for the state.
And so, with that being the case, is most of your funding from the state, or do you gain money from leasing the transportation corridor to the railroads?
Yeah, no, we take no federal or state appropriations whatsoever. North Carolina Railroad is self-sufficient. We make most of our or all of our revenue from either the lease to Norfolk Southern, which is, you know, it's a specific term and renewable, of course, and or third-party occupancy agreements with what are essentially encroachments, whether they be utility or land-based encroachments.
Right. Well, I see we are right up at our break, at least within a few seconds, so let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll come back and pick up and talk more about the project.
Okay.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick steaks are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden steaks, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Steaks, go to www.quicksteak.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with our guest, Christian Forslund, today talking about the North Carolina Railroad Company. Before we went to break, Christian, you were talking about the fact that you don't operate the trains and you earn income from leases and third-party occupancy permits. In terms of your situation where you own the line, so to speak, or own the corridor, and then the usage of that is through the railroads or somebody else, is that unique? I know in most cases I've ever been involved in, the railroad owned the right-of-way, or I guess in some cases the federal government might own it, but I don't know how unique that is.
To us, we feel that's very unique. Now, have we looked at every single railroad, you know, in the entire country? No, but to my knowledge, there is not another railroad that has the same sort of makeup. It is incredibly unique, and it's a great asset to the state. The fact that the state was able to buy out the private shareholders, and essentially we have, you know, one single shareholder. It makes it a lot more. Decisions are made more easily, I should say, because you have one shareholder that you're beholden to.
So, is there a particular agency within the state that you guys deal with for those purposes?
Not really. We work very closely with NCDOT, of course. They have a rail division where they manage passenger rail. Between Selma and Charlotte. So they have rail projects that happen to be on our rail corridor. And, of course, they also have road projects, DOT. I believe I did the analysis, and there's about 6% of our corridor from a land perspective that is covered by state-maintained roads, whether they be parallel roads or crossings, whether they're at grade or below grade, or grade-separated, I should say. So we work very closely with DOT on a lot of rail improvement projects on our corridor.
So there are actually DOT roadways, surface roadways, within your right-of-way in cases?
That is correct. That is correct. And some of that is out of necessity, obviously. Some of it does create sort of choke points, for lack of a better term, in certain areas where you know, even though we have 200 feet wide railroad corridor, there's not a lot you can do because of the other thoroughfares constrain the railroad to somewhere between 30 and 40 feet.
Well, in terms of maintenance, how does that work? Are you guys involved in that, or is that part of the lease responsibilities to the railroads?
Yeah, that's the railroad's responsibility to maintain the railroad, both Norfolk Southern and NCDOT, for safety. You know, I don't think Norfolk Southern would have that any other way. Norfolk Southern has a tremendous safety record, and they maintain the tracks. I believe they have a purview of 25 feet from any mainline track, and that's primarily what they're responsible for. So, if you have an emergency on the railroad, certainly don't call us. Call 911 or call one of the emergency numbers on the crossing arms.
Yeah, one of the reasons I asked that question was from a permitting perspective. When surveyors are working along railroad rights-of-way, I was having a conversation. Actually, I was in Oregon last week, and I was having a conversation with somebody out there about working along railroads. And having been in the surveying business as long as he and I had been in, which is close to 50 years for me, and how things have changed in terms of what we do, the dangers we faced probably when we were still not paying much attention weren't any less than they are now, in all likelihood. But I guess it also depends on what part of the country you're in. If it's extremely rural or if it's more metropolitan, might have an impact on it. But gaining access to perform surveys along railroad lines is a much different animal today than it was in those days. And so when surveyors are going to do that work within your right-of-way but not perhaps on the track, do they get permission from you, or is there a time when they get it from the railroads, or how does that work?
Yeah, anytime you're accessing any rail, you should always go through the proper permitting process and get a right-of-entry permit from the operating railroad. In our case, it's actually a three-party agreement between us, because it's our land, Norfolk Southern, because they maintain operations of the railroad, and the person who needs access. We do not provide, or we do not charge a fee for a right of entry on our railroad corridor. But it's one of those things that I know it adds insurance costs and also time to a job, but surveyors should really consider it because the penalties for trespassing are pretty stiff, not to mention, you know, the opportunity for tragedy as well.
Right. And since your right-of-way is pretty wide and there are actual surface roads within it, if a surveyor were working not on the railroad line itself but within the right-of-way, that same permitting process would still occur?
Yes, it's a public right-of-way inside our corridor, so they have permission or they have, you know, the right to travel on that. That's kind of one of those gray areas. I never really know how to answer that. No one's going to stop you from crossing the tracks at a protected rail crossing where there's arms and whistles and lights. I mean, if you were carrying your groceries from one side to the other, it's perfectly okay. It's a public road crossing. But if you're going to be sitting in there with your face in a tripod, you know, and not really paying attention, I would say that, you know, right of entries or flagmen or some sort of other safety measures would be a really, really good idea.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense and a hard lesson learned sometimes, for sure. And as, again, thinking back to historically working out in the middle of nowhere along railroad lines, and not always having followed probably what were the rules then. We might not have even been aware of what they were, but clearly one of the reasons I brought that up was just to stress the safety side, because regardless of where you are or how safe you think you may be, there's always that potential.
I always ask any group of surveyors that I may be speaking to is if they've ever had a run-in with railroad police, and inevitably there's two or three in the audience who have. I asked them to expand on that as to whether that was a good or a bad experience. And again, inevitably, it was usually a not pleasant experience. Railroad police really take their job pretty seriously.
Yeah, and they should.
Yeah.
You know, from the perspective of the person who may have been held up in their work or whatever for being there when they shouldn't have, it can be frustrating, obviously, but you have to understand the whole reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And why it's important to everybody, including the person who's there doing the work. That's
correct.
For sure. Well, we can get started in talking a little bit about your project. Maybe you can talk about some of the genesis of the project and why it was done, and then perhaps as we go into the next section, we can talk more about the details. But we have 5 minutes or so. So if you could just kind of introduce the project.
Yeah. Well, you know, the 8 years ago, the railroad was well into their corridor management program. It was something that that was developing as it went along. Certain policies, procedures, they were advised that GIS would be an excellent technology to implement for what they wanted to do, which at the time, the main aspect of that was encroachment management and just general visualization of the railroad to see what we have. That has progressed over the years. It has begun to involve the need to reach out to people who have business on the rail corridor, both local governments, obviously the public, and then also everyone involved in other aspects of land development, surveyors, engineers, realtors, title attorneys, you name it. We've used this GIS as both a internal tool to communicate, visualize, and track, but also as a tool to communicate with parties who have business along the corridor. And it's paid dividends from that perspective because we have so many issues with encroachment on the rail corridor, and a lot of it is because of just lack of knowledge about our uniqueness in the 200-foot-wide corridor. So as that's progressed and as our endeavors with surveyors has taken off, we decided that what better way to truly protect and track the corridor than to monument it and have basically turned back the clock and stamp down where this railroad centerline corridor truly was. In most cases, the rail has never moved. But in a lot of other cases, in busier areas of our rail corridor, that track has been re-engineered, it's been picked up, it's been double-tracked, it's been removed. And surveyors and local governments were having a very difficult time with whatever mapping that they were doing and determining where the railroad was. That problem persists into our everyday business, where we end up having encroachments or utility lines, you know, are put in without the proper permit. So we felt that the need to spend some money on this project and truly determine where that railroad corridor was in 1851 and be able to provide that information to a number of people who have business is only going to serve in our best interest.
And when you go, when you're talking about going to back where it was located in 1851, was the right-of-way described as being some distance from the track itself?
Yes. The charter document, which is a public document, you can actually get it on archives.org. It's out there. It's part of it's actually in the general statutes, North Carolina. It describes the corridor as being 200 feet wide. It has some exceptions, like I said, particular municipalities that we went through that were already in existence. For example, Raleigh, I believe Salisbury, and a couple other towns or cities were already in existence. So it wasn't like the railroad just got 200 feet wide right through the middle of town. But that charter was also paired up with some maps that were done by our chief engineer at the time. His name was Walter Gwynn, and those maps are available at the North Carolina State Archives in downtown Raleigh. They are large, very large books, and they are, it's not a survey as you and I would know it today, but they're considered surveys of the railroad as it was laid out in the 1850s before the first train ran. They are extremely valuable maps. They don't have a lot of detail on them, but it shows a 200-foot wide corridor. It has some distances, and it has the individual property owners from which we received deeds from and or court proceedings in order to put the railroad through.
Right. Yeah, I think you and I have chatted in one of our prior conversations about getting those deeds, and I was relating a story that I was involved in, one where the line, the location of the line actually moved from where it was proposed to be significantly, and so it left a few pockets of railroad right-of-way that had been purchased. But those kind of things don't seem as though they'd been an issue with you guys, and I know that we're right up on our second break here, so I don't want to get too much further into that. Maybe when we come back we can talk about, when you're talking about the line and its width and what have you, about actual how it was marked maybe before you went into the project. So let's go ahead and take that break, and we'll be right back. When we come back, by the way, Christian, every...
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Hi, I'm Roy Bowman, hoping you'll join us each Friday at noon for our new show, Food and Farm, brought to you by FeedstuffsFoodLink.com, only on America's Web Radio.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back for our third segment today with Christian Forsland with North Carolina Railroad Company. We're talking about the railroad itself and, in particular, a project that Christian is going to tell us about as we go through the show. And we were talking about during the break that it's time for our weekly question of the day from our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes. And the person who responds with the correct answer via Quick Stakes contest at americaswebradio.com wins the gift today from Parker Davis. And the question we talked about earlier, or as you're in your introduction, Christian, was how old is North Carolina Railroad Company?
We are celebrating our 165th year today. Happy birthday.
So 165 years old. That's pretty cool to be doing the show on your birthday.
Yeah, you know, I think that worked out well. It's actually the state's oldest corporation still in existence. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's
I believe
neat.
I got that right. Yeah.
You were talking about the corridor and the location of where the corridor was and based, and I know that the project you've undertaken has been to better identify where that right-of-way is, and I want to talk about that. I guess the question I had was, prior to that, were there fences along the way, where there are many railroad lines, or what was there to give people a clue of where the right-of-way line might be?
Very little, other than the tracks itself. There's some evidence to where planners and building inspectors in a particular municipality over another one had an idea that we were in fact 200 feet, because you can look at the development patterns and see how that was respected in some areas of the state versus others where, you know, there was little to no knowledge of it. But there was, you know, no fences to speak of, and from my understanding, generally railroads don't like fences, because not only do they keep people out, they also, you know, trap people in. And if you put a fence up in one location, that means, you know, from a liability standpoint, you kind of got to put a fence up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there was very little to mark as wide of a corridor as we have. What I've done, it's progressed since the GIS program really started. We took the 1851 maps, survey maps that I referred to earlier, and we had those scanned. And we geo-referenced them over the GIS using the information that was available to us. We also did that in conjunction with what are called railroad valuation maps. I think a lot of surveyors have heard of these things.
Oh, yeah.
They're usually controlled by railroads, and they don't normally share them. If they're being shared with you, I mean, consider yourself pretty lucky. We are actually under, you know, we have them, but we cannot share them with anyone else. But we overlaid all that stuff with the GIS. We had aerial photography flown, orthophotography, and I was able to build a very good GIS quality rail center line from which we could build a 200-foot wide corridor. But the accuracy and the confidence wasn't completely there. So as this progressed, and we saw the need, you know, for more accuracy in our center line and, of course, the resulting corridor line, we decided to have the center line surveyed. This is known around the office as the Monumentation Project. It really consists of three different stages of the project, the first of which being a two-part stage, really, which is surveying that center line. We had 317 miles of rail center line that we needed to have surveyed to a certain accuracy, and it's kind of hard to do when you have trains on it all the time. So we hired a firm, and we strapped some LIDAR equipment to our high rail vehicle, which incidentally was the first piece of rail equipment that the North Carolina Railroad Company had in over 100 years. And we drove up and down the rails, getting track time from the Norfolk Southern dispatchers and track supervisors, who were nice enough to drive us around. And we picked up LIDAR information for all main passing and siding track. That we were not concerned with elevations because we're mostly looking at the horizontal aspect of the railroad. And we built from there. We have a nice railroad alignment from that railroad, from that LIDAR mission. However, there were 45 miles, non-contiguous 45 miles here scattered all along our corridor, where the railroad, the original railroad center line, has been moved since its initial location in 1851. So LIDAR can't scan, you know, what isn't there. And the second stage of that was to have a conventional survey done of those sections of track. That was done using field evidence in the field, old track bed, box culverts, that sort of thing, courthouse records, deeds and plats that called to that rail center line before it was moved, and then, of course, the valuation maps, which have some very valuable information on there in terms of center line geometry, that sort of thing. All that was put together, and that conventional survey effort and the LIDAR survey effort are combined in order to create a railroad alignment. It's kind of interesting that that's such a large effort, and my deliverable is essentially a single line, which is kind of pathetic when you pull it up on screen. That you know we paid this much for one line, but when you look at the intelligence and the survey information that's built into it, it's extremely valuable. The last stage of this is, of course, the resulting monumentation. North Carolina Railroad, our intent is to put highest order geodetic monumentation on either side of the railroad corridor every half mile. So at 317 miles, I think that came to 1,300 monuments throughout the state. Not all of those are going to be feasible for any number of reasons. Line of sight issues, overdevelopment issues, underdevelopment issues, to where you just can't access the area anyway. My assumption, when it's all said and done, we'll end up putting in a little bit more than 800 monuments throughout the railroad corridor. And what that's going to do is it's going to provide a very useful resource to surveyors, both with the center line and the monuments. Surveyors, if they choose to use our data, the centerline data, they won't really have to access the railroad corridor if they're doing an adjoining property boundary survey. They won't have to go through the right of entry process. We have a surveyor's report. I have coordinate geometry so that they can build it in their CAD system. And they can use that rail centerline and essentially offset that 200 feet. They may still want to verify that, and that's okay, but this should make it a lot easier. It also answers the question, in areas that are double tracked, which one is the real center line? It takes that out of the equation, and I'll get far fewer phone calls, which will be nice. The other aspect is the monumentation. We will have these every half mile. I believe requirements are in the state that if it's within 2,000 feet, the surveyor needs to tie into it. So it's pretty good spacing. We hope that these are available. We did an analysis of available monumentation inside the railroad corridor, and we were shocked to see how much of that monumentation was actually inside the ballast or inside the gauge of the rails themselves, which is incredibly unsafe. This supplants that and provides that monumentation on the corridor boundary at least, well, exactly 100 feet away from that rail center line, which is does not require a right of entry permit and is well away from the dangers of trains.
So in your spacing for the monuments, are you trying to, and obviously you're not going to do it exactly at a particular distance, are you trying to put them, where possible, on some break in the center line, like the PC or PT of a curve or an angle point or anything like that, or is that even possible?
It probably was possible, and it would certainly be nice, but the way the project was planned and some of the logistical challenges we had with getting track time, we felt that that sort of effort would elongate the project it would make the project way too long for what we had an appetite for. It's long enough as it is, and we really want to get this information out there and start making use of it. In order to put that stuff at PCs and PTs, and have those monuments offset at meaningful points in the rail centerline alignment would have been really nice, but it was just far too complex, and in terms of a timing aspect, it just wasn't possible for what we were looking to do. So instead, they're not even exactly a half mile, because, like I said, you have to worry about feasibility. Sometimes, you know, at the exact half mile mark, it might be, you know, a parking lot or a ditch line or something else that prevents you to do it. So the monumentation contractor will move this 100 feet or 50 feet in one way or the other way. However, it is constrained by being parallel to that rail centerline, so they can't exactly just move it wherever they like. They still have that constraint of being alongside the rail centerline 100 feet offset.
So if the surveyor is in a particular area and locates or trying to locate the position of the railroad right-of-way, and they find these markers that are half a mile apart, are the coordinates that are provided for those markers represent some specific spot along the right-of-way? In other words, this is offset at station so-and-so 100 feet away or something like that? Or I guess I'm just curious how the surveyor actually turns those monuments into something they can compute a right-of-way line from.
Well, they won't be able to from the monuments themselves. Those monuments will be located on the quarter line, but what we're going to make available is the centerline alignment itself. That is what the surveyors will be able to use to compute the corridor width from. The monuments themselves serve as somewhat of a fence post for us, I mean, because it's set in the boundary. But unfortunately, there's not going to be any geometry or stationing behind the monuments themselves for a surveyor to rebuild that corridor line. The fact that the monuments are stamped with NCRR on there, and it just increases awareness. But we hope to be able to provide some sort of web-based resource for surveyors to where they can obtain the centerline information and the survey report from our office for purposes of their survey, so that they have the line work and the geometry that they need. But the monuments are there for densification purposes for the state, as well as to, like I said, supplant some of the existing monumentation that's inside the tracks. I mean, I've had horror stories of surveyors say that, you know, the only monument in town that they're able to tie into is covered by ballast. So every time they need to reference it, they got to dig away the rocks to get to it.
Right.
And that's just bad news.
Yeah, for everybody. So in terms of determining alignment for purpose of establishing right-of-way line, well, for this purpose we'll call it the property line, because mm-hmm. it's a property line between you and whoever the adjoining owner may happen to be. In order to get the geometry tied to the ground, in order to do that, would they not then still have to be on the track somewhere to get some location of where that track actually is?
Well, I don't believe so. I think, and what we've seen so far, we've been able to release some of this information preliminarily to surveyors. I've provided them with a text file of the coordinate geometry for our rail center line, and it's been all they needed.
Okay.
Yeah, they've some of them, you know, have been fortunate enough to where their project site was near a public grade crossing, so they were able to go out there and verify the information for their own purposes, and they were off and running.
So basically, if they located a couple of monuments to get a baseline, so to speak, and that coordinate base was in the same coordinate structure of your center line, then obviously they could make that computation. So I can see how that would be the way they do it. Yeah.
Yeah, and all the information that we've done, we've tried to, you know, make sure that it's all uniform and tied to, you know, state grid. It's something that's commonly used. We've worked with, you mentioned Gary Thompson at the beginning of the show. We've worked very closely with his office to make sure that this is going to be of the most use to the most people.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, we're right at our last break, so let's take that and we'll come back and talk about where it goes from here. When we were talking about monuments earlier, you may have mentioned, I don't know the...
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, to our last segment today with Christian Forslund with North Carolina Railroad Company. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the spacing of monuments and how surveyors are going to use those to be able to establish their right-of-way property line that they're looking to create for whoever their client may be. And I think we might have talked about that a little bit earlier, but maybe you could reiterate, Christian, for our listeners, what those monuments are actually going to look like.
Yeah, they're going to be aluminum caps, uniquely identified, set in concrete. We are burying some rebar in there, so, you know, for metal detection purposes, you have an easier way of finding it. When it's all said and done, we plan on implementing a recovery schedule to where the North Carolina Railroad will take it upon ourselves to, on some sort of interval, and maybe, you know, every couple years, to go back and recover all these monuments, make sure they're all there and none of them have been destroyed. And if they have been, you know, we'll most likely undertake some effort to put them back in, and may even be putting some carsonite posts nearby so that they're easily locatable. Of course, they're the data sheets will be published in the National Geodetic Survey database as well, so they'll all be there. They'll be able to be found with their coordinates that as well. So,
yeah, that'll be very useful. And I know just from knowing Gary and knowing how he operates his department, you're fortunate, more fortunate maybe than folks in some other states to have that kind of support through his department.
Yeah, it's really been a good relationship. The NCGS has done a lot for us. We enjoy working with them. And, you know, we hope that, you know, by the railroad spending our own money to do this, it's a resource for the state as well, because we're putting in, you know, over 800 monuments right through the middle of the state, over 317 miles. So it really densifies the control network, and these, like I said, are high-order monuments that hopefully will be around for a long time.
So they actually can serve as control points for surveyors to use to get into the geodetic system, even if they're not working on the railroad line.
Correct. Yeah. One of the municipalities that we went through was undergoing their own monumentation densification or height modernization project, and there was some overlap with their points and ours, so, you know, we were able to save them some money because they were able to either relocate or eliminate a couple of the points that they were doing near the railroad, which weren't necessary because of our project.
Right. That's sort of an added extra bonus that's there for use that not necessarily part of your project specifically, but certainly helpful to anybody who needs to tie into the control network.
Correct, yeah.
And to the counties themselves, because I know as things have progressed, I won't say it's become easier, but I guess the dynamics have changed a little bit, but kind of in the early days of county systems trying to create their own geodetic networks, funding was a big deal, probably still is a big deal for them in terms of all the things they wanted to do. I've actually worked in counties where new projects had to pay a certain fee. I think the fee was enough to put in one or two new markers if you weren't going to do it yourself during your project. So everybody's always strapped for money, so this is bound to be a help to them,
mm-hmm.
I would think. Well, one of the big questions, and we chatted about this a little bit during the break, but one of the big questions that always, of course, comes to mind, and you actually alluded to it a bit earlier, was my question was, are adjoining owners and people who are operating on their behalf surprised to learn where the right-of-way line actually is?
Some are. Some aren't. It's really the one of the main reasons behind the project. The corridor management project as a whole, and obviously what GIS and the surveying effort aims to do is to locate and, you know, establish that rail corridor and then help educate those people who have a business along the corridor. And that includes the adjoining property owners. Some of our monumentation contractors have been run off, said, no, you're not going to dig here. And so in order to stay out of the fray, we've just, you know, moved the site for the monument a little further down the line because folks do have property disputes or I don't know if you call it a dispute, but they're not aware that the railroad corridor is 200 feet wide. It's a very unique animal. And even some of the local governments, their mapping over the years does not reflect that. That's one of our most significant challenges, and that's exactly what this project aims to help clear up.
Yeah, and as human nature would be, if one owns property, even though it's described maybe even precisely in a deed, but not so accurately on the ground, tendencies are that if there's some nice property there that you can make use of for whatever the purpose may be, people will tend to do that.
That's true. That's, you know, we have a saying around here, it's encroachment happens. I think it's entirely true. A lot of folks do have documentation regarding their property that calls to the center line of the tracks, and that's not an unusual practice over the years because that railroad was a hard and fast feature that surveyors would tie into. Mm-hmm. In the railroad business, we know that that track is apt to move at some point, whether on purpose or by accident, and it's not always going to be a permanent location or a way to monument property. But in the days, it was, you know, sufficient. Now, that doesn't mean that the railroad still doesn't have rights to 200 feet wide, and oftentimes there are, you know, conflicting deeds, and, you know, there's about a million different scenarios over 317 miles, which we've come to learn from a land ownership standpoint. Every situation is unique, and hopefully this project will, you know, create more of a basis to help people figure some of that stuff out.
Well, and one of the good parts of it is it will allow you to provide evidence of the perimeter, not solely based on whether tracks move or not.
Correct. Yeah. Another one of the analogies I use, I mean, I'd like to take, it would have been a lot easier to take the money for this project and possibly invest in time travel technology and bring a survey crew back to 1851 and really stamp it down on state grid and everything like that. But obviously that's not possible. So this is very likely the next best thing.
When you were talking about track movement a while ago, did you find significant movement in cases?
You know, there you can't really account for track use movement. I mean, there's hot summers, rail, it's metal, it's known to expand. Heavy trains beat on this track, and you even have issues like ground subsidence and you name it. So you can't really account for that over 165 years. What you can account for is where it's been purposefully moved or re-engineered. In those cases, yes, I mean, there is significant movement. There have been curve straightenings to the tune of, you know, 200 feet away. Where a new corridor was purchased to essentially straighten out a curve. And one of the issues we have is that land where the railroad used to be was never really divested. However, local governments and surveyors, they look at where the track is now as the rail centerline, and they don't really account for the fact that, you know, it used to be 200 feet out in the woods over there. And all that land is still held by the railroad.
Right. Yeah, I can see where that would be quite an issue if you purposely move something for a safety reason or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But people are not aware of that or perhaps didn't recognize the fact that the right-of-way line from where it was when it was purchased didn't really move just because you moved the track over.
Right. And believe it or not, those larger projects are actually the less of a problem. It's the more subtle and nuanced straightenings or re-engineering projects that cause a problem because it's difficult. There's no roadbed or something of that nature. It's difficult to retrace our footsteps when it was more of a subtle move than it was
sure.
Something more dramatic.
And obviously not as perceptible. It wouldn't be something that you would automatically look at and say, oh, yeah, they moved the line 2 feet or something like that.
Right, right.
You're not gonna do that. I was curious. You were talking about using the LIDAR and gathering data along the tracks. Have you been able to find other uses for that LIDAR data?
I'm sure some exist. I have not been able to actually dig into that LIDAR data. I'd love to because there would be some, we all know what that can provide in terms of other asset tracking and that sort of thing. But we really haven't had the ability to get in there and get it done. We have a staff of, I think, 15 people. We do a tremendous amount of work with a small staff like that. And as far as the geospatial staff, you're talking to them. So it's just me. And to work with, huge LIDAR data sets and stuff like that is a little bit more than I can handle right now. We've got this one sole application for it, and I'm sticking to it for the time being.
Yeah, I know when Gary's group went through all the LIDAR surveys after Hurricane Floyd and basically remapped the state in terms of floodplain, that was quite an undertaking, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But it is amazing how much information comes from LIDAR gathering, no question about that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, as you said, having the resources and the time and the actual reason to do it. If there's nothing to be gained, then there's no point in doing it for an academic exercise. That's for sure.
Right. Right.
And so we're probably 2 minutes away from when we need to get off the air here today. So I want to make sure I take the time to thank you for being with me today. This is a really intriguing project, and maybe not totally unique, but it certainly was unique to me when I heard about it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. A lot of people have, said the same thing. I can't account for, what other railroads have been doing with their property or their assets. I tend to believe that with the way technology is, there's other people out there doing similar things. It's well worth it to do for a number of reasons. So I really hope that other railroads are considering this sort of thing.
Right, and I guess one of the issues with that is something you said to me early on in our conversations, and that was we're talking about 300 miles here. We're not talking about 3,000 miles.
That's right. I think Norfolk Southern, actually has over 2,000 miles in the state of North Carolina and maybe over 20,000 in their entire network. So I can't even fathom what kind of an undertaking it would be to map all that stuff.
Yeah, that would be certainly a different animal, no doubt about that. Well, I appreciate you being with me today. It's been great to have you on the show to hear about the project and the approach and just to learn about the North Carolina Railroad, which within itself is kind of unique. So thanks for being with me, and I hope you enjoyed the show and were able to gain something from being the guest.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Kurt. It's been a unique opportunity to get the word out. I appreciate it.
And don't remember, if you ever need to use this, it's archived. So you can go on the website at the radio station and use it.
Excellent.
Take care.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators, any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.